How's it going, everybody? Welcome back to Emerald City Hockey post-game live. Another Kraken W, RJ. It was maybe a little closer than it should have been, but the Kraken got a win. The kids played great. Shane Wright comes in, gets the game-winning goal.
Yeah, and that has to be the headline of this game, right? Is Shane Wright coming in, getting the game-winning goal, looking great. I mean, over 15 minutes of ice time for him, a career high. Good to see him get that opportunity. And it really made the most of it, too. He tied for the team lead with four shots on goal. He was at the net for a lot of the game. And also, I think 84% expected goal share. Really good numbers there for his line.
Yeah, no, it was good work from his line. We'll get into it, but like, boy, does it look weird, right? Watching somebody on the Kraken go net front, play on the interior. It's just not something we're used to seeing until Shane Wright comes along. But it was really solid game from him. Solid game really got up and down the lineup in this one. Lots of stuff to get into there. Of course, though, got to start off talking about our wonderful sponsor, Flatstick Pub. Thanks so much for sponsoring this. You guys all know, I've been talking about it. I'm super pumped for this Friday. We're now finally officially the week of. This Friday, got the watch party for that Ducks game at their South Lake Union location. Hope to see everybody there. And I have a little special treat, a little special giveaway item that I found. And Afra, why don't you come here? Help me out. Come here. So I actually found this. Get Afra in the shot here. I found an Afra plush. It's got her curly tail, the ginger stripe up the back, the ginger on the ears, the pink spot on the top of her nose. Like, it's got everything. And so I figured I would give this away at the watch party. So if you want to win the Afra plushie, hope to see you this Friday at the South Lake Union Flatstick Pub location. We could watch a Ducks game and maybe you could win this. Yes, and she wants to eat it. You can't eat it. It's you.
I'm guessing I'm not eligible to enter.
You're not. No.
Ah.
You're going to be at the watch party, RJ?
All right. Fair enough. I do have to run the post game from here. But man, that is the perfect giveaway item. Got to come to the watch party just for a chance at winning that.
Yeah. So wanted to get that one out there. And now we could talk about Shane Wright, everybody. Right, Afra? Right? So, I already see it, right? Like, we've got... let's get the super chats first here. DJ Singleton, a Shane goal and a Maddie goal directly to the bloodstream. The youth movement, RJ. It's here. It's now. Why wasn't Logan Morrison in the lineup to complete it?
I know. He should have been. I didn't like that scratch. As we were talking about who the scratch was going to be on the podcast, I don't think any of us, either of us, suggested Morrison, but oh well. You know, it was just so nice being able to see Matty Beniers and Shane Wright together in a game, because that's the future of the organization. Two top five picks, that's what you have to build a team around. And especially, they didn't really make the most of it, but just seeing them out on the ice together the few times they were there on the power play, I just like seeing 10 and 51 out there on the ice together.
Yeah, it is one of those things where you get the feeling like, okay, I'm getting a glimpse into the next 10 years of the Kraken here, right? And that's good to see. And I think it also was a good game to kind of demonstrate how different they are from each other. Right. You have Shane Wright, who was playing, you know, more aggressive, certainly in the first period. We can get to that later. But going net front, going to the slot, spending a lot of time really engaged with his line mates down low in the offensive zone, trying to generate and create chances. And you've got Matty Beniers, who, yes, he gets that wonderful goal, you know, 29 seconds in or whatever it was. And he's, you know, he was dynamic at times, but then you also just got to see the rock solid play from him. Right. The fact that he is just a possession machine and just things kind of don't happen unless he's out there for over 2 minutes, then things start happening in the defensive zone. But outside of that. And so it was kind of a good like compare and contrast being able to kind of watch them out there. And it does like get me thinking a little bit, RJ, like I do think we might end up seeing a Shane 1C, Matty 2C long term just because of that higher offensive upside from Shane.
Right. I think you're not far off. I mean, we could certainly see that. Yeah, the offensive upside just looks on a different level from Shane. He's just willing to go to those areas and do the kind of things that generate goals. We talked on the podcast about how the Kraken didn't really do enough to manufacture goals over the last couple weeks or so. Shane was doing everything you need to do to manufacture goals, even on ones that didn't go in for him. You look a few minutes into the game where he's at the net, banging away at those rebounds. He could have had one even before he scored his goal.
Yeah, exactly. And Angela Bug, it sounds like, kind of here with us also. The next super chat, Shane looked confident and happy, thrilled for him, and wondering if he's our dark horse center down the road. I don't know that you could classify him as a dark horse anymore. He announced himself pretty loud here tonight. But yeah, I think that is certainly there. Oh, dark horse captain down the road. Yeah, well, that we had already kind of started.
You've talked about that already.
Yeah, I think that's pretty clear. Just watching him with Coachella Valley, I think that's where we're headed.
Yep. Hopefully they don't miss his leadership too much in his time up here, but at this point, I don't really care.
No, they'll be fine. They'll be fine. They're pretty much locked into where they're going to be seating-wise and everything. Like, they're fine. Light with the Super Chat. This game was the peek into the future that not only we as fans needed, but Maddie and Shane needed. Amazing games by both of them. I do think it's good. You know, this is the whole point of playing the young guys, right? It's to give them the confidence, get them going up here at the NHL level. And yes, this is what the fans needed. Right, was we needed to see them. We got excited about something, right? Like, it's been a while since we've been able to really legit as a group get excited about something, and this got us excited. I haven't seen like Kraken Twitter, the Discord, all that stuff be as active as it was tonight, right? Like, this is what the fans needed.
Right, and for teams that aren't going to make the playoffs, that is something usually you'll have, is you'll bring in a younger player, usually a high draft pick, because there's a reason the team's not doing so well, and it kind of gives the fans something to look forward to. And I think with the absence of that, it would be kind of depressing, right? I mean, look, I think the effort tonight wasn't even that good. I mean, we can break it down if we want to, but I think the Kraken lagged again in this one. And without Shane Wright, I think it's a different story. They might not win the game, but certainly we all have a much worse time.
Well, I was gonna say, even Shane Wright kind of fell into it, right? Like, mm-hmm. He was not as dynamic or as aggressive or any of those things after the first period. Right. Just like the rest of the team. Like this isn't a like Shane Wright thing, but like the entire team just kind of, you know, went on autopilot, as I think you said in the text to me when we were talking about it. And I feel like, unfortunately, I feel like Shane kind of also fell into that. Like, it was just it was just everybody.
Yeah. And I know, because we talk about how his leadership and how he's maybe a dark horse captain candidate. It's not his job yet. This is his first game back up. Somebody else has to perk the guys up. And it's not on Shane to do that right now.
No. And I do wonder if Yanni didn't get hurt, what that the rest of that game could have looked like from him too, because I actually really like that line. I want to talk about them a little bit later. But got more super chats here. Riley, give me Woodcroft coaching the youth movement next season. Encourage offense in Seattle. That would certainly encourage offense in Seattle, RJ, if that was to come to pass. I mean, thoughts? It's a big one.
I mean, it would encourage offense, which in general I'd like to see, but man, you look at the defensive breakdowns that happened under Woodcroft earlier in the season for the Oilers, and you're not going to have a McDavid and Draisaitl to bail you out of that. I'd be pretty hesitant to bring him in, but it would be fun, at least for a little bit.
Yeah, no, it would be very interesting. I do think they need to encourage offense more. I've talked about it plenty of times, right? Like, they need to find ways of creating chances, manufacturing goals, whatever it is. Shane Wright's a big part of that, just in how he plays. That's what he's been doing in Coachella Valley all year. It's what he was able to bring to the game at various points tonight. So I think that's a big part of it. It's just getting him out there, getting him chances, getting him situated within the Kraken team. And then, you know, if you just add maybe one more guy who wants to kind of play down the middle in the slot, net front, something like that, you then have Shane Wright, Jaden Schwartz, and you can have somebody else on this team. Now, all of a sudden, you're starting to have a continuous net front presence that can have a snowball effect for the rest of the team, the rest of the game. I think that can really go a long way for this team if you just get a couple more guys out there with the same similar mentality to Shane Wright. Julia with the super chat. Oh, did you have some?
No, go ahead.
Julia, super chat. Dylan, I just caught up on Red Glare, and I'm planning to argue with you in person about your atrocious takes on Chex Mix, so be prepared. I am totally ready for that fight. I'm like, let's go on that one.
What you saw in my face was actually me reading that super chat and kind of reacting to it ahead of time.
What I'm also curious about, though, is your rankings of the Chex Mix pieces was almost identical to mine. So the only thing I could think of, Julia, is that you're going to try to argue with me that the more toasted breadsticks have been an improvement to Chex Mix.
They're good.
No, they are terrible. They are terrible. Bring me back the undercooked breadsticks. Let's go. correct.
We'll talk.
Win. We'll talk, Julia. Glad to hear you're coming though on Friday. I look forward to meeting you in person. Riley with the super chat. Dark Horse new head coaching hire, David Karloff. That would be a dark horse hire for sure.
This would be the first time, maybe. I don't know. Has the team done that before where they've had two coaches? Well, I guess, I mean, Haxtell didn't come straight from the college ranks, but I still tend to think of him as like a coach with most of his experience in college.
Right. I don't know. Yeah.
What do you think?
I've been a big fan of what he's been able to do at Denver, right? Like, I've watched him with like Cole Gutman and all that kind of stuff. He does know how to get guys going. He does have a style of play. It's kind of close to Bruce Cassidy and the transition game Vegas plays. So I like that aspect of it. I do think he is somebody that's probably due for the next step, the next level in some way. Maybe the jump to head coaching job in the NHL would be a big one, instead of being maybe an assistant for a year or two somewhere or an AHL head coach. It would certainly be like a big step, but I mean, he checks the boxes of kind of what I've been looking for anyway, which is that immediately identifiable style of play. I think he's somebody who does connect to young players. Obviously, he's a guy who's been able to coach up guys, build a program. So, you know, he's got to be good in the room and with culture and all of that kind of stuff. So I don't hate that as much as maybe at first blush it would feel.
Right. It does feel like a riskier hire, but yeah, he does check those boxes. As long as you're okay with someone without the NHL experience, he's as good as anybody.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I definitely agree with that one. That's an interesting one, Riley. Appreciate the super chat there. Edward with the super chat. If getting the game winner in San Jose is wrong, I don't want to be right.
Oh, yes. The right puns were
They were a flowing tonight, and I am here for each and every one of them. Thank you, Edward. And then Julia with the follow up super chat. You insulted the white bagel chips cardinal sin.
Ooh, okay.
I'm going to fight the urge not to just bring you like a gallon size Ziploc bag of all of the white bagel chips, Julia.
Bring a little bag of Chex Mix. You can go piece by piece. Explain your takes.
Yes. But no, that's. They are dead last in that ranking. I'm sorry. They just are.
We'll
talk. They are. They're redundant.
Yeah, yeah.
Why'd they bring them back? It's just filler. Lindsay had kicked off the chat with Shane game winning goal. Right. Love that. Zoe, the highs. Shane. Like, it is just as simple as that. Jessica with the big Shane. Michael, time for you to eat crow, Dylan. RJ was right about Wright's intensity on higher lines and ice time. Boy, it's all the rights and rights. They're really getting me. Now, RJ.
I know where you're going with this. Go ahead.
Yeah, you know where I'm going with this, which was prior to the Yanni Gord injury, guess who was playing in the bottom six, technically?
Technically, it was the Shane Wright line. It was so close ice time-wise, though. It was treated like a regular top nine thing. I stand by it. He was not in a fourth line role, though.
No, but I said top nine.
Well, and,
I said
hey,
bottom
you know,
six is
well,
what so, I had said.
Okay, so. Shane Wright ice time, though. We mentioned it, 15.04. Do you know what that ranked among Kraken forwards?
Oh, yeah, no, it was high.
Six.
Yeah, because, yeah, no, it was high. Because he got, him and his line, they triple shift after the Yanni Gord injury, because I was counting, obviously. But did you, like, I'm sure you.
Yes.
You know, like, they feasted on that ice time, but prior to that, the Gord line was actually pulling away because it was playing really well. Like, I would argue that Gord line was actually the Kraken's best line tonight, just energy and intensity wise. Obviously, Shane light years better than anybody on this team at generating chances. No question there. But I felt like this was the best game we had seen from Yanni Gord or Brandon Tanev in like months.
Yeah, they got the tough matchups and they feasted on them. And I do like that as kind of a, I mean, they were playing, I guess, you know, top 6 minutes, but really it was just so even. They weren't really a true fourth line, but it let the other lines have good matchups.
It makes our whole argument redundant the way Haxtell coaches this team and the way he utilizes players out
I know,
there.
Yeah, what's to say? Yeah, you look at the 5-on-5 ice time of the four lines, and the right line had the most at 11 minutes, and then the fourth most, so the fourth line, had 9:16. That's such a small gap.
Yeah, no.
That's less than 2 minutes of a gap. It's just four second line, it third was, line. It was,
they were all within a minute and a half of each other at the end of the second, right? Because I had texted you the graphic because it showed that Wright was technically in the bottom six. And, but like, that's just the way Hextall rolls with it. I think, again, the stuff that we wanted to see from Wright and what I was really cautious about and why I was saying to put him in the bottom six was we hadn't ever seen him kind of just debut at a certain level in a season and show up with all of the confidence that he was playing with at the lower level, right? Like that was the thing that we were waiting to see. It's what we wanted to see. And like I said earlier, I was cautiously optimistic that he had actually fundamentally changed and just grown confident this season in Coachella Valley. And he absolutely has. Like I'll eat it on that one, Michael. Absolutely. Yeah. I thought that you take the approach of kind of what they did with Coachella Valley, which was bottom six at the end of last season, top six to start this season, right? It worked for him. I didn't see a reason to necessarily change that. And, you know, technically, but prior to Yanni Gourde's injury, that's what the Kraken were doing.
All right, I'll live off
that technicality too. You can ask RJ. But no, it was good. He played more confident than his prior examples would say. And that's I think the big win, right? And I've done this many times. I will gladly be wrong if it means that it's better for the Kraken. And this is certainly better for the Kraken. So I will be wrong. Let's see. Not a pretty game, but Shane makes me excited for next season from Nicole. Shane writes play in front of the net and Ozone is so refreshing from Christian. I still can't get over it. Cause like when you zero in on him, as I'm sure many of us were, I mean, when was the last time you saw anybody on the Kraken fight net front so consistently? The way he circles RJ just so he can continuously be moving down the slot with speed. I mean, I don't really know that I've seen anybody else do that so consistently before.
No, not really. I mean, you had Ryan Donato when he was here would go to the net a lot, but he wouldn't do it in that way. You know what I mean? He would kind of drive the net from further out and kind of take advantage of chances, kind of dip in and poach in for different chances, right? But Shane Wright does it in a different way. And also, I mean, Jaden Schwartz is the other guy who I can think of who sometimes is like that. But seeing the two of them on the same line together, two guys who are both willing to go to the net, and especially in the cycle game, right? As one guy can go to the outside, the other one can cut back in, you always have somebody at the net. And that's something we really haven't seen much of before, but it looks super valuable as far as generating offense.
Oh, it really is. It is a breath of fresh air, and it is something that's going to really help out the Kraken next year. Because even if he's not able to get the goals, right? Even if he's not there, just having him in and around is going to make it harder for a goaltender to freeze the puck because there's this body in front of him who's crashing the net right away once a shot's been taken. It means rebounds are going to be more plentiful. It's going to mean rebounds are also easier to get to because defensemen are tied up physically having to deal with Shane Wright, right? Like there's so many effects that him just being there can have for this team that they just don't have or they didn't have prior to him. And it's just, oh, it's going to make things so much better for them. I'm just so excited by it. Oh, it's everything we knew he could be. And he's actually like doing it at the NHL level. It's just fantastic. Lots of talk here about Yanni Gourde, the injury there, RJ. That was a tough one to see for sure.
Yeah. Glad he was able to return to the game. Glad he's okay. Yeah. Figured he'd be fine long-term, but man, that looked like it hurt. I think we all kind of felt that one.
Yeah. JMG didn't like Hack not playing Shane in the final minutes. I mean, look, I think there was an element still of easing him in. I know he ends up with a lot of ice time in part because of the power play, which I was glad to see him out there on the power play as much as he was. That's what something we had all wanted to see too. I still think, you know, that is Matty Beniers' time. And it was
definitely. Yeah. Cause you have, if you're looking long-term, you have your more offensively gifted center in Shane Wright, and you put him in those positions to succeed. And then you have a dynamite defensive center in Matty Beniers, and you want to put him in those positions where he can do his thing. So I don't have an issue with it. It doesn't speak to any kind of lack of confidence in Shane. It's just using the personnel that's most suited to the job.
Right. And I mean, Shane Wright, obviously we know he can play defense and everything, but this year he spent a lot of time working on this offensive side of his game, right? Like that has been clearly the mandate from Coachella Valley or Dan or the Kraken organization. Somebody made it the mandate because that's clearly what Shane has been focused on this year. And as we've been talking about, the Kraken need it. Kraken needs somebody like that. Matty, he's still a big question mark when it comes to the offensive side of the game. We know definitively what Shane Wright's going to be in the offensive zone. And it does kind of then open things up for Matty to take on more of that role of a straight up defensive centerman. And I think that's going to be okay in the long run. Light with the super chat. I think Yanni deserves some props. He really has stepped up his play since the kids got called up. Feel like he's taking it seriously. I agree with that. I think we talked about this last time even, right? Like since he more so than everybody, him and maybe Jordan Eberle feels like have been the two to really step up since the young guys have been there.
Yeah, and especially in the room too, as you see the guys off the ice, him and Eberle are the two that really kind of take those younger players under their wing. And I think he feels a big responsibility to do that. And yeah, things can get a little bit stale. I'm talking before the Morrison and Winterton call-ups, when you have that room of vets and things aren't necessarily going well. And I mean, he's already close with Matty Beniers, but that's, you know, been an existing situation. And it just, I do think it's given him a little bit of a jolt, some younger players to kind of help mentor.
Yeah, now just because we're talking about younger players, the Logan Morrison scratch, I don't understand. I get that, you know, obviously Shane Wright was going to come in. You want him playing center. I'm all for that. We had talked earlier about the idea of you flex Jared McCann off to a wing. I'm pretty shocked that they kept McCann at center just for him to be the pretty definitive fourth line center, right? We talked about how close all the lines were ice time wise. The one line that was seriously lagging and actually had fewer shifts, once things were regular prior to the Yanni Gourde thing, was the McCann line. Like, I don't understand keeping him at center just to be your fourth line center and then scratching Logan Morrison. That confuses me.
I mean, scratching Morrison kind of baffles me. I mean, personally, I would have kept him in and taken out Tanev, but I've been calling for that for a while. But after watching the McCann, Burakovsky, Winterton line, though, Dylan, at least early on in the game, everybody kind of tailed off late, but I really liked some of the stuff I saw from those three. Just the chemistry seemed to be there. Winterton mm-hmm. looked confident, playing with some skilled players there in McCann and Berkey. It seemed to energize everybody. And I mean, I guess I didn't notice them a ton later in the game, but early on, it seemed to click right away. And I kind of understood, okay, maybe this is why they went with it.
Yeah, I mean, they barely played through the second period, which was part of it. Yeah, I thought Berkey had a good game. I mean, Berkey was big in the neutral zone in this game, which I thought was fun. It's still weird to me. And it's just... at what point do the Kraken have to move somebody out, right? Like, because this is just going to be the Kraken situation forever, right? It's four lines that are all going to be within 2 minutes of each other because there's just too many of them, right? If we're talking about this pretty good fourth line that has a 40 goal scorer on it and another, you know, big time player in Andrei Burakovsky, at least in the past, like, it's just
whether you want to count that as your fourth line or the Gourde line as your fourth line, you can't have two lines that are in the mix for your fourth line that each cost you about $10 to $11 million to the cap.
That is a thing. Riley, Shane and Winterton got to be regulars next season. I'm really more so getting on board. We talked about it earlier on the podcast. I'm all for Ryan Winterton making the team next year. Like, he's good enough. And once they get him on the PK, his value is going to just spike even more.
Yeah, and he just keeps going up. I thought this was actually his best game since the call-up.
It was a really solid game from him. Emerald City Hockey jump scare. Kraken fought hard. there was moments of this game that were kind of a jump scare. That is for sure. Coop, the future is now. Maddie shooting top shelf finally. Shane Wright net front. Hack gets to celebrate another win against a vaunted opponent. Lol. Glad Dunner's back too. We haven't talked about Vince Dunn being back, but I do think that his presence was felt in a lot of this too, RJ, just because I know it's against the Sharks, but think of how much of this game was played in the Sharks zone. And I think a lot of that's Vince Dunn.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, getting Vince Dunn back was huge. I mean, Shane Wright's kind of overshadowed him as far as the conversation, but you know, there's a reason that the Kraken's record is so different with and without Vince Dunn. And he was back to mostly himself, I thought. You know, maybe not 100%, but he was a difference maker in various ways, you know, getting the puck out of his own zone, being dangerous, firing the puck in the San Jose zone. I mean, I like the confidence from him and just stabilizing the D pairs a bit, too. The fact that you're also able to scratch Justin Schultz now and have the Dumoulin Evans pair, I thought was huge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought that was a big deal. That was a big step forward in the right direction from Coach Hextall, I feel like. And Vince Dunn, I mean, almost 3 minutes more than anybody else on this team. He had 23 minutes of ice time, so they did not ease him back into anything, right? Like, he was just the guy that they needed him to be. And I think I had it and I lost it, but yeah, 74.5% expected goals percentage with Vince Dunn on the ice.
Oh yeah.
Yes, it's against the Sharks, but still, that's dominant. Like, he was the guy.
Right, but it's not even like a game where the Kraken were dominant in an expected goals percentage standpoint, right? I think the final count was 3.1 to 2.65 on Money Puck. You know, that's, they're not lapping the field here. So I think if you have 74% as Vince Dunn, you're playing better than the team did on average.
Yeah, no, that's true. Like it's all good. It's all good. Coop, Vince Dunn absolutely blasting Yanni in the nuts shows why literally nobody on the Kraken wants to play net front. And I don't blame them. That was hard to watch. I mean, is that the issue, RJ? I don't think it is. I just think it's that was never any of these guys' style of play, like growing up.
Yeah, I mean, you look at where they were before the Kraken, and that wasn't really their game. And yeah, I mean, that was probably the low point of Vince Dunn's night, unfortunately. But yeah, that one's just a rough bounce. You know, if you go to the net, stuff's going to hit you eventually, and just it's a matter of chance what it happens to be and where exactly.
Yes, no, and none of it's good in that situation. I just think part of it too is you look at Shane Wright, he's just bigger, like he's just broader than really anybody else on this team. Is there a player on the Kraken that is as, I mean, wide as him? Obviously, you know, he's not wide, but
yeah, I know for his size, I know what you mean. But you saw it in that first play too, where he was fighting to the net for the rebound about 5 minutes in, that great scoring chance. Before he's able to take those couple whacks at the rebound in front, he just muscles his way past the Sharks defenseman. I don't remember offhand who it was, but it was just such a strength mismatch. It's great. And I see Coop like later in chat here pointing out that Shane seems to have gotten much stronger in his lower body, improved his balance and leverage. And that's the kind of stuff that we've noticed when watching Coachella Valley over the last year and a half.
Yeah, that was something that stood out to me back at Dev Camp, right? Like him in the Dev Camp, we talked about his leadership. I talked about how big he was. Like he was a man all of a sudden. Like he really got bigger. He always had that frame. He always had the broad shoulders. You knew he was going to be able to play at a higher weight. I still think he's got room after seeing him in Coachella Valley. Like I think he can still get stronger and carry more weight just because his hips are wide, his shoulders are broad. Like he can support it. It's going to be really interesting to see like just how physical presence he can really become as he continues to get older and develop there. Sam, everyone's going to rave about Shane getting the game winner, but let's not forget he was 10 of 18 on faceoffs. Even when Maddie got destroyed in the dot, I think we might have our faceoff guy next year. He only played the three games earlier this season, right? But he was over 70% on the faceoff dot in those three games. Shane Wright, and maybe the physicality plays a role in this too, right? Mm-hmm. But Shane Wright is kind of the Kraken faceoff man of the future.
Yeah, being wide and having that low center of gravity, that's going to help you with faceoffs too. And it might be an area that where we saw Maddie struggle, and you know his being on the other side of that spectrum, I think, might play into that as well. But yeah, he's already ready to go. Does the AHL keep faceoff numbers, faceoff percentage?
I think they do. Maybe they don't.
I wonder what it is down there.
They don't keep nearly enough. Not that it's their fault, but certainly compared to Maddie, who Maddie doesn't make sense to me on the faceoff dot this year. I've never seen somebody be more up and down. Right tonight, 16.7%, like that low, and then like a couple games ago, he was like at 80%. Like, I just don't understand it. Every time I think he's got it figured out, he has a night like this where he goes 2 of 12.
Faceoffs are weird, though. I know they all average out to around 50%, but just you do see variance like that with some guys. But
That's why I think they should get rid of it. They should go with the foosball route. Just kind of shoot a puck in to play and everybody goes after it.
Just let the goalie shoot into play. That's what I want to see.
Oh, that'd be a lot of fun. Joey Decord value.
Mm-hmm.
Through the roof there.
Yeah.
Andrew, can't wait for Shane to have teammates that are net front, so the passes he sends there don't just go to nobody. Yeah, so after watching it, because we had talked about this earlier, right? Both of us were talking about, we thought Jaden Schwartz would be a good line mate for him because he's somebody to go net front. After watching it, Shane just kind of goes net front. And when Shane passes from behind the net, he really needs somebody out a little further than where Jaden Schwartz is. I feel like that didn't work as well as we thought it would.
Yeah, maybe not. I mean, I think there were some benefits to both of them being willing to go to the net, but not when it's kind of with the other ones behind the net. I think that's where you want maybe Eberle behind the net and then Schwartz and Shane out front. But of course, it can't always work out that way. And Shane likes to find space in the high slot too. But yeah, he needs somebody else who can do it when he's not there.
Yes, yes. I mean, the Kraken still need to just find more of those guys in general anyway, I think. Fusion makes the way Shane would grab and then make purposeful plays with the puck instead of fidget and hesitantly dust it off like this team loves to do was so refreshing. it was refreshing RJ. Like I said, he was somebody who created chances.
Yeah, that's what he did. Like. and I'm hoping, I know we've talked so much about these things getting coached out of players, but I hope he just keeps that mindset. And you have enough young guys that it becomes this kind of critical mass where you have enough players playing enough of the time where that mindset almost gets contagious, maybe even gets into some of the vets.
Yes, definitely, definitely. Cole, so happy for Shane Wright. Got to say on his goal, he handled that 2-on-1 with Ebbs like a true pro. Didn't look like a rookie at all. Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing. Shane Wright comes in, Kraken can convert on a 2-on-1, RJ. Coincidence?
I think not. No, I mean, he went to the right spot. He distributed the puck well, and he gave Eberle a target, and Ebbs hit it. To his credit, too, that's a tough pass to make back across, yes. But he made it work.
No, I thought the hands from Eberle on that pass were really, really solid, and then it was also kind of Mackenzie Blackwood to just vacate the premises completely.
Yeah, I mean, well, look, he saw the defenseman back who was right there in the area, yeah, no, of Shane, right?
He committed got to hung the out shot. To dry and, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Let's see. Dunner back equals win. Glad Shane got a goal too. And Ebbs got his 700th point from Kylie. Yeah, I mean, that was a big part of this. And also, did you see, I know somebody mentioned it earlier, did you see McCann apologize to Eberle for taking the empty net goal?
No, I didn't. But I was getting everything ready for post game.
That was pretty funny. So that did happen because that was pretty funny. Weird situation with the empty net goal there too. Like he had.
I know where he's post and then back out. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that was interesting. Sean, listening to the deep dive today, I got the sense that you guys think there will be a new coach sooner rather than later. Did I misinterpret what I thought you were intimating? Maybe.
I mean, look, no I think. We said a few things that were like, we were talking about the issue of good habits getting coached out of players when they're here for yes. long enough and kind of just made that next logical jump of, well, what does that say about the coaching staff? And of course, that's a conversation for another time because we were mid podcast and other things to talk about that were more pressing, but it's something we'll talk about over the off season. But as far as what I think the team will do, I think Hakstol's job is absolutely safe until the start of next season. Then things will have to go south at that point.
Yeah, I do wonder if, like, straight up, RJ, be honest with me, because this was a thought I had. Shane Wright's going to come in, play like this. The other guys on the Kraken, like Yanni Gord, is shooting at under 6%. They'll kind of regress back up to normalcy. Kraken will score more than being the fourth worst team in goal scoring. And they'll be on the right side of 500. Kind of right just above that, and they'll be like in a wild card spot all year long, and Hakstol keeps his job all season.
If they finish on the right side of that wild card line, yeah, I could see that happening. No, yeah. They'll need to go into another nosedive where the playoffs look seriously in doubt, I think, before they get rid of him, which I mean they did that this season.
Yeah,
so if it happens again,
I guess what I'm saying is I legit feel like Shane Wright, if he plays like this forever, basically, he's basically stabilized the coaching position just because he was going to make that much of a difference.
Yeah, I mean, well, look, they needed somebody who can do all of this stuff, and I'm sure they're going to have off-season moves that are going to try and bolster the forward group as well. I could see them right there on the right side of mid for all of next season. It would not surprise me in the slightest.
Yeah. So I'll throw that one out there. I'm sure everybody will have a good time with that. Coop, I love having Shane up, but I just pray to God that the front office doesn't somehow value excitement for the rest of the season over saving a year on Shane's ELC. He's got to go back before that deadline. It sounded like, based off of what Ron Francis spoke with Jeff Baker, the Seattle Times, about, it sounds like the plan was basically what you and I had outlined earlier, which was 5 games, maybe the 6th, but really no more.
Yeah, Ron Francis is not in the business of making stupid decisions, and that would be a stupid decision, keeping him up there and burning the year of his ELC. Francis made that very clear. He's not going to do it.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Stratic, as always, my vote is Disco Dan for the Kraken head coaching job. If he wants it.
If he wants it, go for it.
Michael, sorry to deviate. This is a super chat, by the way. Sorry to deviate from the right excitement, but I'm interested to know what you think of Dunn and Evans as a D pair. That's an interesting thought, because I haven't necessarily put too much thought into that one, RJ. I feel like, though, my initial reaction to it is just that it's kind of, you're loading up on your two best puck moving defensemen, and I would rather just have them separated and able to kind of spread that out a little.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think maybe in certain situations, you could use that if you're down by a couple goals, 7 or 8 minutes left in a game, maybe you give that a try because Evans can play the right side. But as a regular pair, no, I'm not really a fan.
We got to see 10 defensive pairing, pairings in this game, RJ. Obviously, many of these for under a minute. That was one that we did not see. I feel like
I looked that up. Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
prior to this game, they've played about 15 minutes together this season. Pretty good expected goal share, 57.1%. But yeah, they have not spent a lot of time together. And I think probably for good reason.
Yeah. No, I agree.
They're a situational D pair.
Right. Right. Let's see. Ricky, Maddie, much more confident with contemporaries on the team. I do feel like he has also kind of responded to this. I know we had talked about it from a leadership standpoint. He might feel more confident in the room just having more younger guys around. But he does look a little bit different. Certainly tonight, like, I feel like everything was kind of going for him.
Yeah, and I think he's not the only one, too. I mean, look at Ty Karche and his confidence since Morrison and Winterson came up. And he's been, and Evans has been more of a regular, and he's been kind of around his buddies from Coachella Valley, and they have enough of a contingent there. I think it makes them all more confident.
It's, you know why? Because they can play like they played on the Firebirds. I know Maddie wasn't part of that, but like, it's just it's a better style of play. I'm sorry. Hextall put on this earth to confuse Dylan, literally, though. Like straight up. Coop, I love Shane, but I don't understand you, Dylan, saying that Maddie is still a big question mark on offense, but we know what Shane is on offense. I think it's too early for both to make any guarantees. Yes, I feel like, though, we should have a better idea. Like, we know with Shane Wright, just watching him in Coachella Valley this year and watching him in this game, right? We knew this morning talking on the podcast, we knew what Shane Wright was going to play like, or at least how we wanted him to play like, right? Like, we knew what style of play in the offensive zone Shane Wright has. We still don't know that for Matty Beniers, and he's played now two full seasons, full-ish seasons at the NHL level. That's to me where he's still like a big question mark, and Shane Wright isn't. Obviously, the production and the numbers for Shane Wright are a question mark, but his style of play is what it's going to be for a while now, especially as he just gets bigger and more confident with it. Whereas with Matty Beniers, I still just don't know what he's going to turn into.
Right. And he's still trying to figure out the best ways to generate offense and to approach things in the offensive zone versus Shane's style. We know what it is, and we know that it's a style that results in production. You know, things like going to the net, being that big body presence, that's going to translate no matter what league you're in. I mean, we still don't know how much, but it's going to translate in some form.
Yeah, definitely. Angela Bug, Shane somehow put on weight in the playoffs last year. No one knows how. Still think Maddie is throwing his protein shake bottles at him in annoyance. It is just something that comes easier to some guys than others. It just is.
Yep. You know that from being a junior scout, seeing the frames of the different players. Some guys, it's a struggle their whole lives to put on weight. Others, it just comes naturally.
Yeah. Well, and I've talked about that in the past, right? Like, Shane has the frame for it. Maddie kind of doesn't. So like I said, Maddie could add weight, but I don't know that it would be the kind of weight that would be useful to him, or that it would be distributed kind of correctly for a hockey player. Cause that's everybody's bodies are different in that way. Christian, Shane seems to have had some more growing to do since getting drafted. I don't know if it's just me, but his voice seemed to get deeper as well. The beard also, I mean, he looks like he's 45.
That playoff beard last year was something. He looked like a mountain man.
Even what he's got right now is pretty much there, right? Like, he looks like an adult. I don't know how else to say it. He's definitely grown a lot since that first time we were able to meet him at that first dev camp he attended. Like, he has grown for sure. Alan, on the note of the AHL not keeping certain stats, that's always baffled me. It's the future of your franchise, so wouldn't you want to know those development numbers? So it sounds like the teams know those numbers. The teams have people keep track of those
numbers. It's all kept internally, yes.
They don't want it publicly available, whether that's for competitive purposes, whether that's for just fans not bugging them about not playing guys, I don't know. But internally, the teams do keep track of that stuff.
Yeah, it's all tracked. I mean, remember back when the league thought nobody was interested in contract data? Nobody wanted to know that.
We were talking about it when we were going.
That's
through.
The default attitude from the league.
Ron Wilson was the first guy to bring computers into an NHL organization, and he did it this century. Like, that still blows my mind. I don't know. Like, you got multi-million dollar things going on, and you're waiting to use computers. I don't get it. That's been something I've been saving for a red glare for a long time, like an off-season rant. No public face-off numbers for the AHL that I know of from ViaRen. Darn.
Yeah, I couldn't find it. I did a quick search, couldn't find anything.
That stinks. Riley, if Tolvanen can get faster this offseason, he'll be an absolute weapon. Thinks the game well, has poise, playing, and a hell of a shot, but can seem a step behind at times when forechecking / jumping in. What's weird about it is I've watched him specifically, you know, for this, when jumping in the rush. I've watched him specifically for this, RJ. His stride's kind of okay. Like, I honestly don't know why he's as kind of as slow as he is.
Right. Yeah. Technically it looks all right, but yeah, he does seem sometimes a step behind, I guess. Is it just, the speed that his legs are moving? You know what I mean? Just how many strides you can get in. Cause you could have a technically perfect stride, but if it's like strides per second, you know what I mean? If that's low, I guess you don't go as fast.
Yeah. I mean, you could have that, or you could have powerful strides, right? Like a lot of defensemen, they don't have as many strides per second, but they're really strong strides. So they generate the speed that they need that way. It's either lack of quickness and acceleration or lack of strength and the power, right? Cause you can make less strides work for you and you can still build up plenty of speed. There's examples of that, you know, on this team even. Not everybody has to be Brandon Tanev out there trying to Scooby-Doo it all over the place, right? It's a weird one. I just think he's just, at the end of the day, he's just not fast. And it's not even that he's slow, it's just that he's not fast.
Yeah. And I see down lower in chat here, Zoe letting us know that the hat went to Shane. Good for him.
Absolutely deserved it too.
Yeah, no surprise there.
Yeah, no, it could stay with him.
With Cartier and Winterton.
Yeah. Let's see. The fact that the Sharks are the worst team in the NHL but have the sixth best power play in the league is crazy. Benoit Blanc voice makes no damn sense. Compels me, though, from Lindsay. I mean, it was weird. Like, the power play happens for the Sharks, and, like, all of a sudden the Sharks look like a competent team, and then the moment it's over, it all just kind of dissolves.
I mean, it is the most coachable aspect of the game, and maybe they have a good power play coach. I don't know who Quinn's power play coach is, but they're able to get something out of that power play. I think it might have been sixth best at home also. I think their home power play is a lot better. Maybe they just have a feel for that building. But with as passive as the Kraken were on that power play goal allowed, I mean, a lot of teams might take advantage of that opportunity.
That was weird, right? Like, we haven't seen the PK play that kind of conservative, to put it kindly, in a long time, right? I mean, like, nobody was really pressuring. They were just opening up passing lanes. They collapsed is what they did, right? They collapsed into the interior, and that was kind of it. And that's not what they've ever really played like.
Well, knowing how the rest of the game went, I'm wondering if they, because they were already up 2-0 at that point, if they were thinking, okay, this team's an easy opponent, you know, let's just not make any dumb mistakes. Let's not get anyone caught behind us and just kind of follow the puck around the outside. They can't really hurt us. And it led to that.
I hate that if that's the case, though. I don't like that. It is what it looked like. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying I don't like it. Nicole, I want Borgs and Garth. That would be an interesting D pairing. Right, because you can have Borgen be the physical presence, really open up Riker to really focus on the offense. I feel like you would run into issues where both guys might wander away from the goaltender when the goaltender might need at least one of them there.
Yeah, although, you know, you said that about the Borgen Oleksiak pair, as that was kind of coming together, and they made it work.
They did. Yeah, no, they did. Most of the time they have.
Well, yeah.
Riley, Evan's game seems to be improving, but the guy needs to get better at holding the zone, especially on the power play. Will come with time. Agreed, Riley, that will come with time. And it is weird, because, like, that was the biggest thing that I really noticed from Vince Dunn, was how much easier it is for the Kraken to stay in the offensive zone when Vince Dunn's out there. Like, he gets it, right? He has the NHL reps. He knows where a puck is going. And he puts himself in a spot to be there. And Riker Evans still needs to learn that.
And a lot of that is instinct, especially on the power play, when in the 1-3-1, you're the only guy back. And so you have to cover the entire length of the blue line. And often when the other team attempts to clear it, you kind of have to guess. It's almost like a goalie in soccer at a penalty shootout. You have to kind of make a stride or two already one direction based on where you think that puck is going. And it just takes reps to kind of get that instinct.
Yeah, Riley saying he's the last line of defense up there on the point, probably just anxious. He'll develop that cockiness up there like done soon enough. Yeah, no, it's just a reps thing and he'll learn, you know, it's one of those things, unfortunately, with a lot of playing defense in the NHL is you got to get burned to learn from the mistake kind of thing, right? And so it's one of those situations so that it's got the roughest kind of growing pains, but he'll get there. He's too kind of smart and instinctual in other ways. Let's see. Maddie's going to need a big scoring winger. He's going to be useful, but doesn't drive play from Ricky. Yeah, he doesn't drive play. He drives play out of the defensive zone. He just doesn't drive it in the offensive zone. That's certainly where he needs to have the issue there. Let's see. Michael, I don't have a problem putting on weight. Maybe I should take up hockey. Tell me about it.
Hockey helps.
Right there with you. Nordy looks like he's 45. He does. Super chat here from Riley. Call me crazy, but Wright seems to be a guy who could benefit from a couple nights out with the boys as well this summer, blow off some steam from all the expectations, and remember he's still a kid. I think there's an element to that. I know that's what Ron Francis talked about with this, was just trying to put him out there in a position where he's not going to have a lot of expectations, not have a lot of stress. It was going to be impossible if he was on Twitter today not to have expectations just because we were all so excited for him. But like that is something that they're trying to do with him. I just don't know that he's that kind of guy, RJ.
I know he's so serious, so locked in. I mean, you could see at the intermission interview, he was just so focused. The media training was hitting hard there. But, you know, I think when you're the presumed number one overall pick for years, like since you're 14 or 15,
exceptional player status, all that.
Yeah, you live in that. And I don't know that you can fully get out of it, but it, you know, the team building and the team bonding will be important. Is just getting to know his teammates and getting to build those friendships.
Right. And I think that's a lot of what we saw from him in Coachella Valley, and then why he was kind of able to be as confident and comfortable in a more leadership role there, you know, as the season went on, to the point where he was at, you know, as soon as 2 days ago, right, with that team. And so I do think that is going to come from him. And I think the more and more young guys kind of get into that locker room, I think that's going to help some too, right? Because if you think back, Maddie was, you know, fairly brash for a young guy when he came in, right? Think back to that cup of coffee. He had the 10 games at the end of season one, how talkative he was, right? He was always answering questions. He was really put forth. He was talking a ton. And then that's kind of slowly maybe gone away as things have gone on. I think Maddie could be right back there. I just think that's part of the kind of leadership group this team has, right? Jordan Eberle, he talks when he needs to talk. He doesn't talk other times. Same with Yanni Gourde. Adam Larson, right? Like king of stoicism. Yeah. So like, I feel like with the established leadership group, it isn't as much about that kind of stuff all the time. But I feel like as more and more young guys get in there, we'll start seeing that again.
Yeah. And it's going to be great to see them all come up together, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The personality will come back. let's see. Hat is photoshopped on. They definitely forgot it this time, from Nicole. That's not good.
It does look kind of photo. Yeah, it does look photoshopped on. I wonder if they forgot it again.
Oh, that is rough. That is.
I know. We have to search for it in LA.
Yeah. Let's see. if you're thinking about trying hockey, do it. From Becca, adult learn to play is super accessible, except the gear really adds up. So buy used or borrow if possible. Yes, that is the one problem with hockey, is how pricey it can get. But otherwise, it's a fantastic sport to play. And yes, adult learn to play stuff is always fantastic. I know a lot of people in this community that have kind of gone through that program and had a great time with it.
Yeah, and the Kraken do a really great job of it. Cannot recommend it highly enough. And until you get out on the ice yourself, you don't know just how fun it can be.
Yeah. It says in alt that the hat is for sure photoshopped, from Olivia. So that's fun. Yeah. I liked, did you see the description they used for the pick when they had all the Firebirds?
Yes, I did.
For that pick a couple games ago. And it said, like, you know, a rare photo of Garth smiling. Like, that was fantastic.
Yeah, that was awesome.
It was a good smile. It's the second time ever I've seen him smile. It was really cool. Outside of him scoring.
I couldn't believe it.
Yes. Yeah, more talk from like Coop, right? I still feel for him. People are already labeling him a bust because he hasn't been a full-time Kraken yet. It's brutal. I mean, lots of people in there kind of talking about the overall situation with him. He plays like this for a little while, he'll be fine. No.
Yeah, totally. And it's something that I think too, people that are just further outside of the team and their decision-making process maybe don't always understand. And even on 32 Thoughts today, you know, Merrick was asking like, Fried, do you understand this at all? Why haven't they called him up? Why haven't they called him up? And Elliot Friedman, who I think is more in the know, said, I'm not surprised by this at all. This is Ron Francis. I bet this was the plan all along. This is how he likes to do things. It's not a comment on Shane. And, you know, lo and behold, I think that really was the plan.
Right. And I do think that there's an aspect to it that Shane plays, right? Like in it. And that is, you know, last year was rough. It would have been rough on anybody, right? Just the up and down nature of it. Where is he going to go? The fact that he just kind of hung around until January, right? Until after the World Juniors, he didn't have a place, right, to be. And so I think that complicated things greatly. And that really pushed back the timeline for him, as it would anybody, right? No, if you're just sitting around not playing games, you're not going to get better. You're not developing at all, right? Like, that's just fact. And so I think that played a role in it. But I also think just the fact that then out of that, you know, he joins Windsor and he was okay, but like they kind of flamed out in the postseason. He didn't really take the world by storm. He found a very role player position with the Firebirds for their playoff run, right? Kind of playing further down the lineup, but very effectively. And it just kind of set things up to be like, you know what, let's just give him a year in Coachella Valley, let him get confident in the top six role, and let him get confident to be the net front player that we know he wants to be and that he can be, right? And I think it's all worked and it's all made sense if you look at it all kind of laid out that way. But it was just like a different situation from, say, Matty Beniers, right? Where it was, I know I need to work on my shot. Let me go back to Michigan and work on my shot. Hey, I worked on my shot. Season's over with Michigan. I'm coming to join you, right? Like it was just different. And you know, that's not normally the case for a top five guy, but I think a lot of it just had to do with the fact that he did not have a home for 4 months last year. And that's just brutal.
Stability was valued above all. And I think in Shane's situation, that was the right call.
Yeah, definitely. Viren, I thought Dunn looked terrible at holding the line last year and Schultz and Riker were better. I'm sure part of it was reps, but I think part of it is confirmation bias.
That was an area where Dunn improved, though. He's improved a lot recently. Right. And I think that's one of the things he worked on, like, is becoming more of a player on the power play. Because last year that was an area where he still hadn't quite figured it out.
Right. We talked about that over the offseason. We said, how can Dunn kind of repeat the season that he had last year from a production standpoint? Well, he had a ton of room to grow on the power play. And then we've talked about it over the course of the season. He became the best power play defenseman, right? Like, he was not going into this season. He absolutely was by December, right? Like, he really put a lot of work into that. And that is one of the things, as you get more established in the NHL, you think about where Vince Dunn started with this team, RJ, with this franchise. He needed to work on playing defense. Well, one, just having the minutes and the opportunity to be a top pairing guy. And then he worked on defense that first season, got a lot better at defense working with Adam Larson, grows year two, so where he really wakes up offensively and he becomes a great 5-on-5 player. And then season three, here he goes. He can work on the power play now, right? Like, it's one of those things. You step by step it and you just kind of go and work on what you need to work on.
Yep.
Sorry, did you have something to say? Look,
good. No, I didn't. I'm good.
Okay. Let's see. Nordy, exciting element of tracking the organization is seeing development and guys meshing over time. That's why I'm so big on the prospects. Like, it's just so fun. It's just so
fun. And something that really Kraken fans haven't fully experienced yet, just because of where the team has been at with how many drafts they've had. Whereas if you follow any other team over the last however many years, you've had that already. There's been that time. The Kraken are kind of uniquely in a spot where we haven't got to see it yet, but we're starting to it. It's really fun.
Yeah. Viren, Dunn has definitely improved. I'm not disputing that. No, I know. I was just using it as an opportunity to kind of talk about how guys pick and choose things during like off seasons, and then they work and improve it for that next year. It's just, you know, he's a good example of that. And I can't use Sidney Crosby forever. RJ won't allow it.
Crosby and the face-offs and all the little things he worked
on. The goals and all of it. I know. Well, he was the textbook case for a long time there. Is there anything else that kind of stood out for you for this game, RJ, that you wanted to talk about?
No, I mean, I won't get into, you know, the effort issues continuing and all that stuff. But I think, you know, we hit the main points. It's great to have Vince Dunn back, Shane Wright. You know, we've talked plenty about him over the last hour. Yeah, I mean, we kind of covered it. I don't want to really break down the minutia of this game just because that's not really what it's about. I think this is a bigger picture type of night, and that's kind of where the realm we've stayed in.
Yeah. It might make them the next game a little bit more brutal, but yeah, I mean, I think that's,
they'll need a better effort next game. Yeah. If they want to win,
they're going to need to. I'm curious to see how like Shane Wright is about going to the middle when he's going to be going up against, you know, a blue line of NHLers, mm-hmm. right? Like there's going to be elements of stuff like that. That's going to be really interesting to see. But again, I'm excited for it because he had this game. Right. He was able to get confidence. He scored a goal. Like that was huge that he was able to have that in this game. He was rewarded for the effort pretty much instantaneously. Right. I think it was his second shift. And it was the one where he has that backhand net front on the rebound and it just goes wide and through the crease. And then third shift, he gets a goal. Right. Like that is exactly what he needed. That's exactly what I think we all needed and wanted for him in this situation. I think that's going to help him out a ton kind of going up against the Kings in this next game, where it's going to be a little rougher. Do you think we see lineup changes for the game against the Kings, or is this one of the classic Hackstall, we won so the lines stay the same? Do you think we might see something tweaked? Because we talked about it, we kind of like this McCann line, I really liked the Gord line. I don't really know that there's stuff I would change.
No, I don't think we'll see any changes. You know, they won. It looked all right. I think he'll stick with it. And you look for guys to maybe take out of the lineup. I don't know. I'm just sorting like by the game scorecard. I guess Ryan Winterton, Andre Burakovsky at the bottom. Maybe like Morrison in for which I don't know. I think that we'll keep the same lineup. Hackstall usually doesn't change it after wins.
No, I don't think you would. And I mean, are you going to put Morrison on the wing then? Or do you put McCann on the wing there? And you have
there's no clear good fit. Yeah.
No. The big one, and I know that there's, you know, some people in here like Zoe, I was glad to see Riker wasn't bench for Schultz. It feels like Hack is listening. I mean, that would be the other one, would just be because I was in LA last time and that's what he did. Mm-hmm. He swapped him out, although Riker was coming off of a much worse game in that Dallas game.
Yeah, Riker, third best game score.
Yeah.
From hockey stat cards of any player in the game. So yeah.
Probably don't see that change then coming either. Yeah. I think the only thing we see that's different will be probably Joey in net.
Yeah, that's true. Cause they've pretty much stuck to that alternating rotation in net and fine with that.
Yeah.
Cool. Totally with that for the rest of the season.
Definitely fine with it. Edward, I'm glad they let Shane develop in Coachella Valley instead of rushing to get him on the roster at the big club, like so many others would have done. Will pay dividends in the future. I'm sure. I really think it would. Like again, this is an example of how to develop somebody, right? Like ignore the first 4 months of last season. That was very much what not to do. But this has been an example of what to do with somebody where again, you start him off at the lower level, lower down in the lineup, let him get comfortable, slowly build that confidence, challenge him at the beginning of a season. You know, we're giving you this opportunity. We want to see this from you. Cause if you don't pull it off, we'll bump you down. Right. And they challenged him and he responded to that challenge. And he's just grown from there in so many ways on and off the ice. So it's really, really been cool to see. Definitely.
Yeah, that's why the AHL exists. And if they could have put him there last year, they would have.
It would have solved everything if they could have. It would have just solved everything for sure. And it does make it frustrating then, like moving forward. Like, you know, Kraken are going to have a top 10 pick this year. Right. We know that. Yep. Probably not going to play for the team next year. I would be pretty shocked if they did, actually, whoever it is that they select. And it's going to kind of be that situation again, right? Where you're going to have a player who's going to kind of quickly outgrow Major Junior and they're just stuck. And that's just is what it is. It's brutal. I don't like it, RJ. You got to create a double A league somewhere in the middle for these guys. allow them to be in the ECHL.
That would change the. I don't know that I'd want to send players there.
You don't want people on the Orlando Solar Bears, RJ?
It'd be wild, man. Legit, I wouldn't want to send my prospects down there. No, my top 10 picks.
Legit players past Sean Avery 10 years after he retired. You don't want them on the Solar Bears?
No.
Oh, I like that. Nordy was just asking, what are your thoughts on how they're alternating goaltenders? I'm totally down for it. I think it's great, and it's exactly what they should be doing.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, again, wins and losses don't matter a ton. Both goalies are playing fine. They're playing pretty similarly. Just alternate them, keep them both fresh, and ride that out for the rest of the season.
Yep. Riley, all right, boys, appreciate the postgame. Next game against the Kings will be a better look on all our feelings tonight, not matching up against the San Jose Sharks, that is for sure. And Michael with the super chat, good night. Really like the postgame chats. Appreciate it, Michael. Appreciate the super chats from you and everybody who gave tonight. Really, really great stuff.
Yeah. And before we go, I do want to wish a very happy birthday to my dad, who I know is watching this and listening to this. So just want to say happy birthday, Dad. Hope you had a good day. Sorry I couldn't be there to celebrate it with you, but glad I can at least interact through this.
Yep, definitely. Happy birthday to you. And then just one more quick reminder for the watch party this Friday for the Kraken's game against the Anaheim Ducks. Going to be at that South Lake Union Flatstick Pub location, and you could win the Afra plushie if you attend. Oh my God, it's so good. It's so good. Puppy play stance and everything. Got the curly tail just like she does. I love it. I love it.
It's perfect.
I should say you could win it if I remember to bring it and I don't steal it and hoard it here in my room to keep with me forever.
I know. It's just, it's right there. Just tempting you.
Yeah. And if you
the community agree, deserves it so yeah, much more, Dylan.
I know.
You have
know,
the real one.
That is true. That is true. I get the Afra every day. And if you agree with me that bagel chips are the worst part of Chex Mix, I'll give you an extra raffle ticket.
Oh, there you go. Just stacking the deck. That's how I win opinions.
That's how I win all my arguments. I bribe the jury. All right. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. And we will see you all next time.